Muslim girls and agreed there are a lot of things that needs to be done within the community. How about collectively saying all women, regardless of where they're from, you need to, you know, we need to, and we need men within the community to actually shout this out. This is wrong. Full
but
stop.
But this is drowned. Our voices are drowned by the political correctness that says this is not an issue in the Muslim community. I know of the horror British girls are going through by their parents who are taking them in forced marriages. I know what is happening to young women who come to me. I've arranged the weddings of three teenagers who are being beaten up by their parents. And no reporter asks a question to any of these mullahs, do you allow your daughter to date? What is there something physiologically wrong with Muslim girls that they can't fall in love? I'm a father of two daughters.
Okay, Tarek, let's just let Fazal respond, and then I've got another couple of people in Canada to introduce you to. Go ahead.
I want to make a couple of points.
Just make the one, and then we'll bring someone in from Canada.
Okay. There are cases that within the Muslim communities that it doesn't lead to a murder or something. An affair happens, and it's solved, but this never gets, like, the attention of the media. And when these cases come to the media, it doesn't mean that the whole community is involved in murdering their kids. And it's not, as you was stated before, it's not confined to the Muslim community. And if you kind of analyze the cases, you realize that there is a lack of understanding from professionals because they don't understand these communities. And therefore, it is very difficult to prevent when these murders, when they come up.
OK, well, let me introduce you to a couple more people in Canada to discuss some of these issues. Christy Blatchford's back on the programme, a National Post columnist who's been following this trial throughout. Christy, welcome back to World Have Your Say. And also Jonathan Kay, another columnist for the National Post, who's been writing about this too. Welcome to both of you. Christy, is Canada, are Canadians feeling ashamed right now?
I don't know. I mean, I've been locked in a courtroom for 3.5 months, and I spend the rest of my time on the highway. I'm not sure I'm the best person to ask.
I mean, I suppose from what you saw in the trial in the courtroom, are there ways in which the authorities could have caught up with this sooner?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. The three teenage sisters made it. They were practically shouting from the rooftops. Their schools knew they were unhappy, that they were afraid. They knew why they were afraid. They were afraid of their father and their brother. They called on three occasions, I believe it was, child welfare authorities. And, of course, it's Quebec, so there's a French one and an English one, and both were called at different times. One of the social workers did a pretty thorough job. She interviewed the children, pronounced the allegations to be founded under the child welfare legislation, and then closed the file. Montreal police were called a couple of times, got involved. They thought there was plenty of ammunition to lay a charge, but there was a protocol where they had to work with child welfare, blah, blah, blah. It just goes on and on. So there were many missed opportunities where those kids could have been safe, absolutely. And I think it's a combination of probably all the things you've been talking about, the polite Canadian need to be culturally sensitive, the fact that the response of social agencies was really unsophisticated. The Kingston Police was the only organization of all the organizations which came in touch with this family ever, to our knowledge.
Okay.
Who immediately got an interpreter to speak to the parents. For the rest of it, they used the children as interpreters, the children who in some cases were the ones reporting abuse.
I think Christy raises some very pertinent points, and I do think, I do concur that there were indeed missed opportunities, and it's evident that there was a lack of efficient systems and failures to record sufficient accurate data. And I think this is indeed an opportunity for all agencies who may have been directly or indirectly involved in this particular case to come together to form better working relationships to ensure that individuals who are affected by this form of violence and other forms of gendered violence receive adequate training and understanding in terms of nuanced aspects of it.
Okay.
Indeed, cultural aspects shouldn't be used as an excuse not to intervene by the state.
OK, well, let's bring Jonathan Kay in, who's waiting patiently to respond to that. And Jonathan, other comments coming in. Mark in Sydney on Facebook says, how are these barbaric acts Canada's fault? Are people in Canada seeing it that way?
I don't think people see it that way. I think that people are shocked by it. I think it's also important to remember that whenever a child is killed by a parent, it doesn't matter what the background is. There is always this kind of soul-searching, saying, you know, how could we miss the warning signs? Here in Canada, for instance, there's plenty of Aboriginal children who die under very different circumstances. Usually it's as a result of neglect. It's not deliberate murder. But we ask the same questions. We say, how did we let this happen? And part of it is living in a democratic society where we investigate allegations of brutality towards children, but except in very exceptional circumstances, we don't take children away from parents. More could have been done in this situation, clearly, but it is a fact that in all Western societies, there usually is a very high threshold for taking children away from parents. And I think this is a wake-up call that we need more resources, like, for instance, translator services. I think Christy is totally right to bring that up. But I think I don't think it's a case where we completely ignored what was happening. There were all sorts of social services people who did get involved, and it wasn't a case of us being blind to what was going on.
Christy, you were trying to come back there.
Yeah, well, I disagree a little bit. First of all, that many agencies got involved, Jonathan, but the sum total of their action was zero. They really did. I mean, the school tried the hardest. I give them lots of credit for that. But, you know, there was a vice principal who testified, for instance, that she had talked to the three of the kids, or two of the kids, I think. They had described the horrors they were living through, and it was largely control and oppression that they were describing, and fear. And then the parents arrived at the school, and she saw the children immediately change and recant, and she said in court, "I thought to myself, am I looking at a child who's afraid?" And the answer, of course, was yes, but nothing happened. So, you know, these aren't new mistakes, and I think what we have to do more than anything is maybe in the feminist social worker community and the agencies who tend to deal with women and girls who are running away or frightened is to understand that not all victims of abuse, physical or emotional or otherwise, look like victims. These girls, when Zineb ran away to a shelter, there's this glamorous, exotic creature with her designer handbags and clothes, and they couldn't believe, I think, that she was an abuse victim. There was a Montreal police officer who testified, who interviewed Sahara, the middle girl, who was complaining to her about a lack of freedom. And the police officer said, "A lack of freedom? You're wearing nice makeup and you have jewelry and modern clothes." I mean,
we picked up on that point earlier on, didn't we, Ronnie? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's passing all those what you're seeing in front of you. In terms, this is a classic case of when women or young people are victims of domestic abuse, where they will retract that statement, what's going on. One of the other things in terms of political correctness I'd like to pick up upon is in Sajid's case, where the lead officer, Clive Driscoll, he wasn't taking any of it. He thought this is a murder, regardless of where the family has come from and the background. An example of this, when they went, for example, to arrest the mother-in-law, it took over 3.5 hours to get her into custody. However, he immediately then sought assistance of a Sikh officer, and when they went to go and arrest the husband, within 10 minutes, you know, he was in within custody, etc. So we've got to see past. Actually, I want to bring this individually, regardless of where this individual has come from in terms of background or age, etc. And why we need to bring them in and the need to, for example, question them.
Okay.
So it's seeing past whatever nuances there may be.
OK, and you mentioned Surjit. For those people who weren't listening at the beginning of the programme, that's your family friend who's killed in the Punjab in 1998. Her husband and mother-in-law were convicted of orchestrating the killing, but the people paid to carry out the murder have never been found. That's right.
And the body had never been found as well. And instantly, I just wanted to actually talk about interpreters in this country. Where is the funding for that? As soon as anyone talks about interpreters, they don't want to bring anyone in because local authorities haven't got the money. And in terms of delivering training to multi-agencies, there is no training. As soon as we want to talk about cultural competency or honour-based violence, immediately the shutters go down because of the austerity measures.
I'm going to go to Blair, who's called in. In fact, he posted on Facebook and we called him back in Canada. Hello, Blair. Welcome to the programme. What's the point you'd like to make?
Well, the question is, should we be ashamed as Canadians for what happened? And it's a horrible, horrible event that took place. But as far as being ashamed for of us, I mean, who really likes, who would really be proud of anything like that? We can't be proud of our justice system. I mean, we did what we could after the fact. As far as before the fact, it's a learning lesson for all of us. We probably need to rethink how we deal with child abuse situations or suspected, and that's the problem. It has nothing to do with religion. Unfortunately, I know a few cases personally, just Canadian-born citizens. You know, I mean the kids are having problems and they are going for help, and the problem is in Canada, the child services doesn't really have enough authority to step in between the children and the parents in a lot of cases. Maybe.
Okay. Well, that's Blair in Prince Edward Island. Thanks ever so much for getting in touch. Fazil, you wanted to pick up on something there.
Yeah, Jonathan said something about accountability in democratic societies. If you notice, most of these cases from Afghanistan, from the Kurdish region of Turkey, Iraq, from Palestine, they come from very oppressive states. There is lack of accountability, there is lack of responsibility by the state in dealing with citizens, and therefore the families that come from those societies, they don't necessarily understand what responsibility and what accountability means. So, and if you want to make a larger point, there is an issue of like these oppressive states that they oppress their country, like citizens, whether the Canadian government that provides assistance to the Turkish government or to another government should question like themselves that, should we make a condition that when we provide this, there should be more democratic like institutions, more accountability by the state, so people feel, those citizens that they come from those countries to these to the Western countries, they feel more responsible and more accountable.
Okay, it's an interesting point, connected point to that of Mirwais in Afghanistan posting on Facebook saying, how could one expect a person who's brought up in a conservative culture to change his trait or behaviour which he or she's adopted from childhood, or change things that are infused in his blood and brain? Rashid in Somalia's tweeted, there's no honour killing in Islam at all. It's all a cultural thing. You're listening to World Have Your Say. We're discussing so-called honour killing after a story lots of you have been reading about in Canada and commenting on too. And CBC reporter Sylvette in Montreal has been reporting on the case of the Shafia family. Hello, Sylvette. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hello.
How is this being covered in Canada? It's been top of the news pretty much there all day, hasn't it?
Right. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, there's a really kind of a push and pull between wanting to shed light and, you know, talk about the issues that are coming up with this case, but yet not, you know, perpetuate stereotypes and not do that, because I mean, this is not a religious thing. This is a cultural issue. That's the way that we're framing it, and that's the way that I believe it needs to be framed. And you know, me, I'm personally of Pakistani origin, a first generation, a Canadian, and I saw this case, and I see how this can happen. I've seen cases where this can happen. So for me, it was a kind of a personal, you know, kind of quest to seek to shed light on these issues, but yet not perpetuate stereotypes. Because coming from those communities, I know we've dealt with our share of stereotypes, you know, obviously following 9/11, and we don't want to do that. But at the same time, we need to talk about these issues. And it's interesting because I kind of went out into the Afghan community here in Montreal, and it's really interesting because these are people who, you know, went to the funeral of the young woman, and maybe not necessarily, you know, friends of the family, but the community is so tight-knit and small here that many of them were aware of the family or had seen them in certain events. And it's interesting because within that community there's such a divide. Half the people who, you know, feel, or mix of people who feel that this is something that, you know, it's completely something that's not in their culture, it's completely wrong. And there's actually a group of people who sympathize with the parents. They think the parents are just trying to, you know, obviously they're against the killing. That's not, you know, any question, but it is, they sympathize with the challenge that parents are facing, trying to instill values in their daughters and losing control. I think that's what the parents are, some people are sympathizing with here.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Sylvette, a CBC reporter in Montreal. I'm going to bring in Marianne Bruni to talk with all of us now. Welcome to World Have Your Say. You're in Texas, Marianne, and you've made a documentary film about this issue. Tell us more about that.
Well, we shot a film, Quest for Honor, that actually was about women who are fighting honor killing in Iraqi Kurdistan. And I want to say, I don't think we should hold back on the cultural issue. This is a totally unacceptable type of crime. And in fact, the Muslim Public Affairs Council in the United States has issued a bulletin abusing women, abusing Islam, that this is not Islamic. It's tribal. It's unacceptable. The women who are hurt are Muslim. Let's think about that. Let's not be saying we're going to not criticize Muslims, yet we're going to allow Muslim women to be abused and killed. And I have so many Muslim women friends, and all of them are against this.
Dr. Gill, do you want to talk? Yes. Aisha Gill, have